This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. How often do you think about your soap? Well, if you answered, not much, maybe you should. You see, a lot of what passes for soap in stores is technically not soap, according to the FDA's definition. It's full of lab-created chemicals and detergents because, well, it's cheaper to make. Now, what if you could buy natural soap made from natural ingredients like tallow, palm oil, coconut oil, and scented with essential oils, and for just a little more than you'd pay for grocery store soap? Sterling soap is 100% natural, and with a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne, there's a product and a scent for just about everybody. Check them out for yourself at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
Gridiron Timeline year 1983 might be one of the most amazing years of football history ever, as we had some great things. A quarterback standing up to the NFL and winning in the NFL draft. We had a national championship that ended with the underdogs winning their first championship, and an NFL draft in 1983 that was truly amazing, filled with stars. Hello, everybody. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Been doing history here for quite a while on Pigskin Dispatch and sharing our timeline with you. If you haven't checked it out, PigskinDispatch.com timeline up at the top. We have every year, every day of the year being covered here as we go on through football history. And this week we are celebrating the year of 1983, and what an amazing year it was. I mean, it all started off with some great games that were played, including some bowl games that finished up the 1982 season. The Rose Bowl's 69th game, the UCLA Bruins outlasted the Michigan Wolverines 24-14, and the Tom Ramsey and Don Rogers of UCLA were the co-MVPs of that. The Sugar Bowl featured number 2 Penn State against the undefeated top-ranked Georgia Bulldogs, led by Heisman Trophy winner and college legend Herschel Walker. And what a game that was, too. Kenny Anderson in January 2nd led the Bengals with 20 consecutive passes for a 35-27 win over the Houston Oilers, and a game capped the season which he won his second consecutive passing title with an NFL record 70.55% completion percentage. Yes, Ken Anderson, the Bengals quarterback, many people have forgotten about him. Definitely a great legend there. And we had an offense that had 10 players on the field on January 3rd, 1983, their own 1-yard line. Usually you'd call that disaster when you don't have enough players on the field, but that wasn't the case when the Cowboys played the Vikings on a cold January day. According to ESPN.com, when Dallas had a Heisman-winning running back named Tony Dorsett, they had no worries. The Pitt product uses talents to set an NFL record with a 99-yard touchdown scamper in a Cowboys 31-27 loss to the Minnesota Vikings with only 10 guys on the field. Coach Tom Landry had to be chewing his fedora off his head when he saw that play develop, but was probably quite happy when Dorsett ran it the whole way. Great thing. January 1983, the Olympic Committee restored Jim Thorpe's Olympic medals for winning both a pentathlon and decathlon 70 years after they were taken for him from allegedly being a professional athlete before the games, where he played, made like $5 or something playing a baseball game that had nothing to do with his Olympic things. But the Orange Bowl was the site of 1983. New York Jets 1980s were a team built on speed, and the worst thing that could have happened to the team of that nature is to have it rain for days on end on a natural playing surface in southern Florida. Unfortunately for the Jets, it did. And the game had gone down in NFL history as the Mud Bowl. A wet, muddy field negated the Jets' significant speed and skill advantage, and the Miami Dolphins benefited, blanking the Jets 14-0 in the AFC Championship game so that the Dolphins would advance to the Super Bowl. And their opponents some 7 days later on January 30th in Super Bowl 17 was the Washington Redskins, who sported a record of 7-2 in the strike-shortened NFL season. The game ended up going to the Redskins with a 27-17 victory with John Riggins, the Diesel, powering his running game and that running game of the Redskins, winning the MVP of the game. It was just a thriller there all the way through. The Dolphins fall to the Redskins in that. We had some really great things. Now, the draft became the drama, the centerpiece. And that's what a lot of we've talked about all week on long on this. You know, the John Elway story of him telling the Baltimore Colts not to draft him. You know, Jack Elway telling the Colts not to draft his son John. They did not want to go to that, you know, that franchise because it was kind of a laughing stock at that point. Felt it was being run very poorly, did the Elway family. And they ended up not getting their wish because the Colts did draft him. But everybody knew that John Elway could go play baseball. And he threatened that. The Yankees wanted him. Steinbrenner wanted him. Probably would have been a great ball player in baseball because what an athlete, you know, Elway was. So he had all the cards, and he stood up against the NFL, and he won. And the Colts ended up trading him to the Broncos for really, you know, they had some draft picks and everything. But when you have a future Hall of Famer and a quarterback that takes your franchise to a bunch of Super Bowls, it's worth every penny of it. And, you know, they ended up winning a couple Super Bowls near the end there, too. And it made just changed the whole complexion of the Broncos organization as they really became winners for you know, a long time with John Elway at the helm. And but that draft was amazing. You know, on April 26, 1983, a draft took place. So, of course, Elway went first to Baltimore. Eric Dickerson came off the board next, went to the Rams. Kurt Warner, the running back, went to Seattle. He had a great career at Penn State and, you know, fairly decent too. Chris Hinton, tackle, went to Denver. And, of course, Hinton was a part of that trade for Elway. Another Hall of Famer went number six, Jimbo Covert, to Chicago and really helped build that that little powerhouse team they had there in the mid-'80s in Chicago. And then another quarterback goes off, Todd Blackledge, to Kansas City at seven, with Dan Marino and Jim Kelly sitting back, you know. Number nine, Houston drafted Bruce Matthews, a Hall of Fame guard. Jim Kelly finally went off the board at number 14 to Buffalo, even though he sat out and played for the USL for a couple seasons. But Buffalo held out hope and eventually got their man. He guided them to four Super Bowls. Willie Gault went number 18 to Chicago. So they really double-dipped in that first round and got some really good ball players there. Ken O'Brien, another quarterback, comes off the board at number 24. Still, Dan Marino sitting there. Finally, at number 27, Dan Marino taken off the board by Miami. And right after him was a guy that opposed quarterbacks and made their lives nightmares. Darryl Green went to the Washington Redskins, the great DB, fastest man in the NFL for many, many seasons. So, you know, just a tremendous draft. Roger Craig also went in that draft number 49 to the 49ers, ironically. And, you know, just some great players all around. And I think there might have been another Hall of Famer, and I'm probably missing him, but you can put it in the comments so we give credit to that. I apologize for that if I missed you. You know, so the big trade happens on May 2nd, where Elway is traded from the Colts to the Denver Broncos. We have a great story on that. The Tampa Bay was awarded Super Bowl 17 in June, and you know, the USFL, then they take stage. ABC broadcasts the first USFL championship July 17th. Bobby Hebert wins the MVP honors. The Michigan Panthers defeated the Philadelphia Stars 24-22 in that inaugural title game of that short-lived spring thing. Anthony Carter sealed the Panthers' win with the big catch. You know, 20 of 39 passes, 314 yards was Zabear. Carter catching that 48-yarder with 301 remaining. And, you know, their defensive talent of the Michigan Panthers, John Corker, 28.5 sacks for that unit that had 74 sacks on the season. So that's a lot of sacks in a season for, you know, Mr. Corker. Would have been a great deal. It would have definitely been a record had it been in the NFL. Calvin Bryant was a Philadelphia Stars feature back. He had 1,442 rushing yards that year. Franco Harris became the third player in NFL history in September on the 11th to rush for over 11,000 yards. 118 yards for Harris in the Steelers' 25-21 win over the Green Bay Packers put him in that distinctive category. The Saints had their first overtime win in history on September 18th in 83 by overcoming the Chicago Bears by a field goal in the extra period, 34-31, thrilling game there. Franklin College's quarterback Pat Brennan on September 24th, 1983, was intercepted a record 9 times by a stingy Saginaw Valley defense. That is an NCAA record for that. In October 2nd of 1983, the Green Bay Packers put up the NFL record 49 first-half points against the Buccaneers in Tampa. 55-14 was the final score of that, as the Bucs were really drugged through the mud by the Packers on that game. And Art Monk on October 2nd set a receiver. He starts the first game of his 183 consecutive streaks games with a reception. Started there in 1983. And the Jets announced to the media that they would be leaving the confines of Shea Stadium in October 6th to play all their future games at the Meadowlands, sharing the stadium with their NFL counterparts, the New York Football Giants. Legendary quarterback shootout happened October 17th. Lynn Dickey led the Green Bay Packers against the Redskins' Joe Theismann, and it set a record for the highest scoring game of Monday Night Football history, a record still held for 35 years until 2018. The Green Bay Packers defeated the Redskins 48-47 in a thriller. If you can go back and remember that game, probably you can watch it on YouTube or NFL.com if you have the pass to get in there to watch that. The Grey Cup was won by the Argonauts, who defeated the BC Lions 18-17 in a thriller. First is Argo's first Grey Cup victory in 31 seasons. Mike Rozier won the 49th Heisman Trophy for Nebraska. And speaking of Nebraska, they ended up playing, they were the top team that year. They ended up playing in the Orange Bowl on January 2nd against the number 5 ranked Miami Hurricanes. Nebraska was a big favorite, but Miami came out and had a 2-touchdown lead in the second half. Nebraska fought their way back with just a few moments left. It was 3rd and 8. And Irving Fryer, the Nebraska wide receiver, wide open about the 3-yard line, drops a pass, which would have been a sure touchdown, which could have really tied the game as Miami was winning 31-24. So that left the Nebraska with a 4th and 8. And what happens next, Osborne takes Rozier out, who was the Heisman Trophy winner, puts in Jeff Smith, his replacement, and they run the option play to the right. The quarterback hangs on to it, pitches at the last second to Smith, who runs the sideline, dives, hits the pylon. It's 31-30. Everybody's expecting the kicker come on, kick the extra point, tie the game up. Nebraska's probably crowned the national championship. But Osborne wants to leave, no doubt. He keeps the offense on the field, goes for 2, and the pass play is deflected at the goal line by Miami. They hang on and win it 31-30 and are the national champions themselves for the first for the Hurricanes and their little dynasty run that they had there in the 80s and in the 90s with the powerhouse teams. The Auburn Tigers secured a narrow 23-20 victory over Alabama in the 48th Iron Bowl at Legion Field on December 3rd. And the Rams defeated the Cowboys 24-17 in the NFC wildcard game with the help of Leroy Irvin's record-setting 94-yard touchdown return. Just a tremendous thing there. The Liberty Bowl was played on December 29th, and it was the second college football Holy War game that was ever played. Notre Dame defeated Boston College 19-18 in a thriller there right at the end of the year. The MVP was BC quarterback Doug Flutie. Who in a loss, the MVP was a losing quarterback. So pretty amazing stuff there. We have all this on our timeline, pigskindispatch.com. Check it out. Check out any year you want, any day of the year you want. We keep building more and more everything in here. And by the start of football season, we will have every year, every day, free football history from 1869 all the way up to the 2026 season. Till next time, everybody, have a great Gridiron Day.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you got to do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.